Today on CityCast DC, we've made it to DC Love Kit Day 3, part of our week of episodes devoted to finding, nurturing, and even letting go of love in the district. So for today, maybe don't think of this music as romantic. Think of it more as a jazz night out with friends, because today, we're all about friendship. Now, most folks know that DC can be kind of a hard place to build up your support system from scratch. Dr. Marissa Franco is here to help. It's Wednesday, February 8th, 2023. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is CityCast DC. I spoke with Dr. Franco last fall when her book, Platonic, about the science of making friends was first released. And her whole thing is that platonic love is just as important as romantic love, a point she especially stresses around this time of year.
Other forms of love don't have such a widely acknowledged day of celebration to invest in that form of love. And I think I would probably love Valentine's Day more if there was also, like, I don't know, Platonic Love Day, that is very widely regarded. And yeah, I think single people too sometimes have feelings around Valentine's Day. Like, it's a reminder that they're less than because they don't have that type of relationship in their lives. But, you know, something I try to argue in Platonic is that, hey, friends, if you don't have one form of love in your life, that is an offering. You have more room for another type of love in your life because single people tend to have better friendships, tend to spend more time with their friends. So, yeah, it's not that you're without love. It's that you have spaciousness for platonic love.
So, Dr. Franco, how has living in D.C. shaped the way that you see and understand friendship?
Well, it will be a surprise to no one that we live in a very progressive city where I feel like we are encouraged to question some of the norms, to be sort of very critical thinking group of people. And I think that is really reflected in the ways that I see friendship, which some people could see as radical, but are actually very traditional. For example, I think, you know, there's no reason why we can't have friends as life partners. We can't raise kids with friends. We can't have houses with friends. I also question the ways that we have absolute boundaries between romantic and platonic love. I think romantic love, feeling like you're passionate about someone and you idealize someone and you could spend all your time with them, that's also a part of our friendships too. Romance is a part of friendship, and it has been throughout history, I'll also say. My script for friendship is a lot broader than probably the average person tends to be. And I think that's in part because I live in a city that offers different templates for the types of life that you can have.
Ooh, I love that answer. I mean, do you think that people in DC are sort of more open to different understandings of what friendship and relationships can be than people in other places?
Well, yeah. And I will say, I think, like, the queer community really leads us in that understanding. For example, like, me questioning whether romantic love is part of friendship or not, that's really founded in the scholarship of Angela Chen, who has this really great book called ACE, on the history of asexuality, where she sort of argues, like, romantic and sexual love are different. And if friendship isn't inherently sexual, that doesn't mean it's not inherently romantic, because those are two different things, right? I'm sexually attracted to people that I'm not passionate about, and I don't idealize, and I don't think are the greatest thing ever. And I'm romantically attracted to people who I don't want to have sex with, right? And so I think also, like, one thing I talk about in the book is, like, our friendships were really ruined by homophobia. Before 1867, it was taboo to have sex with someone of the same sex or gender, but you could still sleep in the same bed with them and write them love letters and hold their hands and carve their names into trees, because none of that is sex, right? What happened is Sigmund Freud, Richard von Krafft-Ebing, two psychiatrists that wanted to argue that same-sex love is a sexual disorder. And in doing so, they created the concept of sexual orientation as we know it. And all of a sudden, it was stigmatized not just to have sex with someone of the same sex, but to engage in any behaviors that could signal sexual orientation. So no more holding hands, no more sharing a bed with friends, no more cuddling with your friends, no more even just being too loving towards them, right? Because that might signify that your sexual orientation is non-heterosexual and thus disordered, according to these psychiatrists. So homophobia, I would say, has broke friendship for all of us, and men in particular.
Yeah, it's interesting how your work has this grounding in the queer community. I identify as queer, and most of my friends do as well. And there's something about the kind of relationships I feel that we
have to have with each other that just don't fit the mold where it says that your romantic partner is the end all be all of all of your relationships, like the nucleus. I feel that we, by necessity, have the capacity for different kinds of pairings being really important in our lives and not just having it focus on that one person who you have a romantic pairing with.
Absolutely, yeah. There's this interesting theory called the substitution hypothesis, which argues that if we don't have connection in our life in some way, we're going to find connection in another place, right? So I think for queer folks, sometimes if you're not accepted by your family, you find the offering of deep connection in your friendships and you find the offering of a chosen family. And that's also something I feel like what really pushed me to write the book was my feelings like if I didn't have romantic love, I was unlovable and I wasn't worthy, and how my own friendships really made me start to question that. And I think now I still see how, like, for example, being single, it's like stigmatized. It's seen like your life isn't complete. But in fact, single people have more friends. They tend to spend more time with their friends. And even though marriage makes us slightly happier, single people who socialize a lot are actually happier than the average married person.
Wow.
Right? And if we don't, yeah. So if we don't perceive friendship as inferior, that opens us up to so many different life paths. We all need community. And we all need connection. It just doesn't have to be the traditional template that's been laid out for a lot of us.
The brand new Arbor at Tacoma is built for your most convenient urban living. Whether you want to enjoy the vibrant Tacoma, D.C. community or comfortably retreat into a sleek sanctuary all your own, the kitchens have striking dark navy and white cabinets, and throughout the home, there are wood floors and smart home technology. Some homes even have a private outdoor space. With a quick walk to the metro, you can easily head into downtown or stay close and enjoy the retail that's on site. Located at 218 Cedar Street Northwest, the Arbor Tacoma offers brand new one- and two-bedroom condos starting in the upper 300,000s. Visit thearboratacoma.com for more information. That's Tacoma with a K. So thearboratacoma.com.
Let's be real. Lawsuits are not fun. But with Paulson & Nace, at least they're a little easier. Paulson & Nace is a D.C. law firm in every sense of the word. It was founded here in 1979. The two partners, Chris and Matt Nace, were both born here and are local leaders who care deeply about the D.C. community. Paulson & Nace handles medical malpractice, wrongful death, and other complex injury cases when someone has been hurt by the negligence of others. And they don't just settle every case. They'll go to court. They'll fight for you. Paulson & Nace has even been recognized as one of U.S. News' best law firms. So, if you have been hurt or have lost a loved one because of someone else's mistake or negligence, call Paulson & Nace for a no-obligation consultation. Visit www.paulsonandnace.com or call 202-463-1999.
So, we know that you're a psychologist by trade. You mentioned having a script for friendship. What does the science say about the best way to make friends?
So the first thing that I like to remind people of when making friends is remember research on something called the liking gap. The liking gap is based on a study where when strangers interact and were asked, hey, how much do you like one another? They tended to underestimate how liked they were, which suggests we're less likely to get rejected than we think we are, right? So going into friendship optimistic by assuming people like you is really important. Researchers told people, hey, you're going to go into this group and people are going to like you based on your personality profile. That was a complete lie, but they found that it was a self-fulfilling prophecy because thinking that way made people warmer, open, more friendly. Whereas when you assume rejection, you're cold, you're withdrawn, you're going to reject me, so I'm not going to make myself vulnerable. And you actually are rejecting people.
So you basically just need to embody, like, people are going to like me, and that will sort of become true because you'll be putting out all the things that we like about other people. You'll be putting those vibes out.
Exactly. Yeah. I think when it comes to friends, one of our biggest liabilities is we think a lot more about how people are treating us than how we treat people. Why is nobody reaching out to me? Why did nobody try to overcome my walls to be my friend? We're not asking ourselves at the same rate, have I reached out to people? Have I made people feel loved and accepted? Have I made people feel like they belong? It's like we can sometimes expect things of us that we're not holding ourselves to. And I think Platonic, my book, is like, let's hold ourselves accountable too, because when we do, we're empowered to actually have a change in our social relationships.
So the secret to friendship is basically more or less fake it until you make it.
Kind of. But the thing about, I guess, faking it is that it's sort of like affirmations in a way, right? Like affirmations, they can change your neural structure, like how your brain is wired after a while. Like if you keep telling yourself people are going to accept me, eventually it's going to be part of what your brain assumes going into interactions, right? So the line between faking it to making it becomes sort of blurred. And that's when the sweet spot happens. That's when things really start to change.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I'm big into the like affirmations and sort of that you can sort of create your reality a little bit by, you know, telling yourself what you want to be true. You know, I used to wake up in the morning and be like, oh, today's going to be a terrible day. And now I wake up in the morning and say, we're going to have the best day ever. And it sounds so dopey, but it does actually make a difference, I think.
It does, because what's happening in our social worlds especially is just so ambiguous, right? Like, we don't know why that person didn't hold the door for us, or why our friend took long to respond to our text message, or why that person interrupted us in class, right? So if our template and our idea is people are just rejecting me versus our template or idea is people like me, we're fundamentally going to perceive the same behaviors very differently.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right that a lot of it is like not dwelling on these like negative fantasies that we might have about what's going on with other people. Are there other strategies that you'd recommend for folks who are looking to make friends as adults? Like, are there groups people should be checking out or spaces we should be frequenting if we're looking for more friendships?
Yes. So if I was your friendship coach, and you were like, I moved to DC and I have no friends, where should I start? Right? Here's what I would tell you. There's this sociologist, Rebecca Adams, and she says, for friendships to happen organically, we need continuous unplanned interaction and shared vulnerability. Meaning, I have to see you repeatedly over time, and we didn't plan it, and we have to start being a little bit vulnerable, which we get at recess and gym and lunch class when we're kids, but as adults, we actually don't have. So we really need to take the initiative. So first thing I would suggest is, find a way to create that infrastructure in your life where you have that continuous unplanned interaction and shared vulnerability. And that looks like doing a hobby or interest in community. Do you like writing? Join a writing group. You like books? Join a book club. You like hiking? Join a hiking group. You like languages? Join a language group, right? And what that does is when it's repeated over time, you capitalize on something called the mirror exposure effect. So when researchers planted women into psychology classes for varying numbers of classes, at the end of the semester, none of the students recognized the woman, but they liked the woman who showed up to the most classes 20% more than the woman that didn't show up to any. And that just shows our unconscious tendency to like people the more they're familiar. So when you show up to this group, it's going to be awkward at first. You're going to be weary. You're going to be uncomfortable. That's natural, right? Our brains, whatever is unfamiliar to us, we are uncomfortable with. Over time, you can expect that it's going to get more easy and more comfortable. Then you want to assume people like you, like I said earlier, and shoot your shot with someone in the group that you like. And that just looks like saying, oh, it's been so nice to talk to you. I'd love to connect sometime outside of this if you'd be open to it, right? Remembering the liking gap, remembering that people are less likely to reject us than we think they are. Meeting up outside of that group starts really creating the buds of friendship that can continue with the infrastructure that you already have to see each other.
That's really useful. But I guess the flip side of that is that one of the realities of being in a city like DC is that it can be kind of a transient city. People live here, they move here for a program or a fellowship or an administration, then they move away. How is that an obstacle that you see playing out and that presents a challenge to this like consistency that you're saying our brains need to really form those strong bonds of friendship?
Absolutely, Bridget. I relate to this. I have like 6 friends moving in the next year and I am grieving, but I'm like, luckily I know how to make friends. I wrote this book.
Luckily I'm the expert.
Yeah, luckily for me. Funny. So I think because people tend to move out of the city a lot, you're going to have to do this process in a way that's repeated over time, in a way that people that are in smaller towns where people move less will not have to do, right? But once you start putting yourself out there, you're going to start realizing that like people are really just less likely to reject you than you think they are. And here's the other thing. How do you be likable towards others? According to the research of the theory of inferred attraction, people like people they think like them. So if you want to be likable towards people, just like show that you like them. I mean, and even in initiating, inviting someone out to hang out, you're doing well. You're showing someone that you like them. You're showing someone that you're interested in them. And that tends to make them like you more, not less, right? It's not creepy, weird, and clingy. It's actually people are like, oh, I appreciate this. I've been wanting to make friends. So it's our predictions of the social world are just so off. And I just want to convey that to people because they like, I just want to ask you, like, what friendships would you go for if you weren't afraid you get rejected? And I just want to tell people, like, go for them.
Wow. I mean, that's such a powerful way to put it. Like, if you weren't being held back by fear or like a negative self-fulfilling prophecy that people are going to think that you're a weirdo or a creeper, what would your relationships look like? What would your friendships look like? How would you be different? How would your life be different? Like, that's a pretty empowering statement.
It really is. And you know what? It's funny because assuming people like you, right? We think that's about how other people perceive us, but there's this interesting theory called the sociometric theory of self-esteem, which argues that our self-esteem is a reflection of our gauge for how people perceive us. It's not actually how we feel about ourselves. It's how we think people feel about us. So if we assume people like us, it's not only going to make us more likely to engage with them, it's actually going to give us higher self-esteem. So if people actually don't end up liking us and we've done all this work to assume people like us and raise our self-esteem, it's actually going to impact us less than it otherwise would. Because I think people are afraid of being too optimistic because they're like, oh, then I'm really going to get let down. But in fact, if you're cynical all the time, that's a lot more painful than being let down in a moment.
Definitely. That's such good advice. I guess one of the other questions I have, given that you wrote this book in D.C., you live in the area, how do you think D.C. fares when it comes to friendship? One of the stereotypes of people in D.C., I don't necessarily subscribe to this, but it is a stereotype that we love talking about our jobs. The first time we meet somebody, it's like, oh, what do you do? Given this focus on like career and professionalism, how do you think D.C. fares in the friendship department?
Well, here's the double-edged sword, Bridget, right? You mentioned that D.C. is a transient city, which makes it hard in some ways, but it also makes it easier because people in times of transition are particularly open to friendship. So you have all these people moving into the city who are just a lot more open to friendship than people that have been staying in the same place. Also, we tend to see, you know, when people find their spouse and they start having kids, they tend to focus on their friendships less. They tend to lose friends according to the research. I think in DC, we have a lot more diversity in the life paths that people take. So, you know, you have a lot more people that are sort of just single, maybe don't want kids, aren't in this traditional relationship. And that leads them with more time for friendship too, right? Single people have more intimate friendships and they spend more time with their friends. So I would say that even though DC, like, definitely has its quirks. Like, yeah, we probably need to stop talking about our jobs all the time. I think it also has its own rewards.
I love that. I mean, I guess, like, why did you decide to write this book? Like, why friendship? Why is it something that you're so interested in?
Yeah, so I would say in my young 20s, I was under the spell of romantic love. I felt like I was only worthy with a romantic partner. And if I was going through a breakup, it made me unlovable, right? And I just took it so hard. So I decided to start this wellness group with my friends where to kind of heal, we practice wellness together. Let's meditate, let's cook, let's do yoga. And it really turned my individual friends into an entire group. We had continuous unplanned interaction and shared vulnerability. But yeah, we became a group. And the most healing thing of all was regular connection and community, right? It was more healing than any of the wellness strategies we were practicing. And it made me question, why did I think I wasn't loved? This love has always been around me, right? Like, why doesn't this love matter? Why doesn't this love count? And I was like, I don't think this is just a me problem. I think this is a society problem. So I just started to read a lot about friendship and get really interested in it and figure out, like, who's talking about this problem? I think it's really hurting us. And we're, like, really lonely. And our divorce rate is, like, very high. And it just doesn't make any sense. And so that's where I just got really interested and wanted to write my own book on friends.
I mean, the work that you do is fascinating, but it's also critical. My parents were a different generation, and they were the folks who were like, it's about your nuclear family, your partner and your kids in your house, and that's what's important. So they didn't really have a lot of friends. And I think now when we talk about this, the real deep threats of loneliness, how people are really suffering, what would you say to someone who's like, who cares? Friends don't matter. Focus on your partner. Focus on your kids. Focus on your professional success. Who cares if you have friends? What would you say to that?
So, Bridget, remember how I said we tend to be really bad at predicting things because of our negativity bias? That's true when it comes to connection. We tend to predict that we won't enjoy connection as much as we actually do. And what I would say is that you will only know the value and the beauty and the depth and the intimacy that friendship brings to your life once you find those friends. And before you have that, you fundamentally cannot predict just what type of value that it will provide in your life. And so I will say, if you go out there and you make the effort to make those new friends and you still think friendship sucks, then you can tell me to eat my words. But if you haven't actually tried, then you can't actually know.
I love it. Thank you so much for reaching out to us and for writing this book. And thanks for chatting with us today. The book is Platonic. I feel like I learned so much about the value of friendships from this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that interview was back in September, but we checked back in with Dr. Franco now to see how our book is doing.
It's more successful than I ever could have dreamed of. It became a New York Times bestseller, which... yeah, it's like life goals. And I'm really just proud of everyone who has read it and used it to be more intentional, be more loving, create community for themselves, and in doing so for everybody around them.
And if you want to learn more, to be more intentional and loving to yourself, you can meet Dr. Franco in person and ask any lingering questions that you have.
So tomorrow, February 9th at 6:30 p.m., you can join me at Arlington Public Library. I will be talking about Platonic. It's free. There'll be a networking event afterward with free pizza as well. And you can register online on Arlington Public Library's website.
Okay, now for some quick news. The family of Daryl Becton, who died in custody at the Arlington County Jail, sued for wrongful death and reached a $1.3 million settlement agreement. Becton died from complications related to opiate withdrawal. The family claims that he was not properly cared for or taken to a hospital despite life-threatening symptoms. Becton's death was the seventh in 7 years at the jail. Meanwhile, fast casual chain Cava is going public. The company announced Monday that it submitted a draft registration statement with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. They haven't yet decided on the number of shares and the price range for the proposed offering. And lastly, there's one less pro-slavery statue in D.C. The U.S. Capitol has permanently removed the marble bust of former Chief Justice Roger Taney. He was a Maryland slaveholder who wrote the Supreme Court's Dred Scott decision in 1857, which ruled that enslaved people were not citizens. Taney's bust will be replaced with one of Thurgood Marshall, another Marylander and the first Black Supreme Court justice. One non-news ask for you. We're collecting DC life hacks, and we're going to start sharing them very soon. So share yours with us. You can email any of your tips to dc@citycast.fm. That's all we've got here at CityCast DC. And if you enjoyed the show, share it with an old friend or a new friend. And our newsletter, Hey DC, will have more friend-making tips for you later this week, so be sure to subscribe. We'll be back tomorrow morning with even more news from around the city. Talk to you then.